kids, it's time to get some SML podcast all up in that.
What's up, everybody? This is the SML Podcast. I'm your host, Joe. It is another reviews episode, but it's going to be a fun one. Later on in the show, we're going to have a bunch of friends dropping by and have ourselves a little party cast.
I thought you said it was going to be fun because I'm here. Well,
it's starting off fun as well because Tim Ekibis is here.
Hey, how's it going?
How are you doing?
Good. I am doing quite well.
You get to lead off the show.
Yeah, kicking it off. Getting the party started, as I have, like, the past few weeks on and off with the various reviews and such.
Indeed. That means you got a big one to talk about.
But, yeah, before something big must have happened. I don't know what. We'll find out.
Before there. What do you want to chat about? The floor is yours, sir.
Oh, man. Oh, geez. I mean, I'm sure it'll get talked about on the news later this week. I was just looking up The Last of Us Part 2. Release date, which is finally a thing that exists, which is awfully nice of them.
Yeah, and then I saw they have, what, like, 4 different editions of the game?
Yeah, well, that's what I saw first. I saw, like, all the collector... Well, I saw... The order of operations was I saw them announce the PlayStation Plus games for next month. I'm just blowing news for later in the week. But, you know, it's Last of Us in baseball. And I was like, oh, The Last of Us. And then I started seeing, like, oh, the pre-order stuff. Like, oh, that's why there's synergy going on here. Make sure everyone's played The Last of Us Remastered, so they buy The Last of Us Part 2. And then I was finally like, they probably put a date on that, right? And then, yeah. Then, lo, yes, I found the date. So,
lo and behold.
Lo and behold. Gosh, it was a heck of a weekend this past weekend for me trying to spend time with any video game in particular.
Why just is that? Because,
well, we had the foreshadowed reviews that I'm here to execute. I had 2 of those, including one biggie. Zelda, a new Legend of Zelda game, sort of, dropped on Friday. Is that a sore subject, Joe? I saw you complaining earlier.
I'm very sad. Best Buy, like, I was waiting to get it. I was going to get it digital. And I was like, you know what? Just in case they get any of the Dreamer editions in, like, at midnight on Friday, I'm going to wait. Lo and behold, they had a couple in stock. I put an order in. There's a delay in shipping.
Now we're in limbo.
Yeah.
It's a nice little artwork, too.
Still don't have the damn thing.
Yeah, it's a cool little game. It is so Link's Awakening. Kind of my take on it, just for a hot take review here, is it feels like Nintendo wanted to get, like, a more kid or beginner Zelda friendly game out there, which is almost sounds like a backhanded compliment, but really, like, you consider the complexity of a lot of the 3D Zeldas that have come out over the past decade and a half. Like, I think it's beneficial to the audience to be like, okay, 6-year-old kid, not that they don't love crafting things and building things, but, you know, this is your, you know, a good straightforward classic Zelda game. And it's a nice, a wonderful looking update of, you know, a Game Boy Zelda, which going back to early Game Boy games can be kind of rough in this day and age, you know, just it still looks good and plays well, but, you know, it's definitely outdated, and they do a really good job of recapturing Link's Awakening. And I haven't played Link's Awakening through since the early 90s, so it's a treat for me. Beyond
that, always my favorite Zelda game. Like, so many people are like, Ocarina of Time's the best, or Link to the Past is the best. No, to me, it was always Link's Awakening.
Yeah,
it was
one of those people.
Just the perfect length, I thought.
Yeah. I mean, for me, there's cool things about Link's Awakening. For me, I was always like a Link to the Past person, or a Majora's Mask person. Eventually, I was one of those weirdos. And more recently, I'm kind of like, man, Breath of the Wild is a real dynamite game. That one's definitely up there.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, you had a Zelda game out that I'm trying to squeeze some time into. What the heck else was I playing this weekend? Now I'm blanking on it. Of course, I have to think about it. The Genesis Mini came out. So God, did I pick up a lot of stuff at Best Buy on Friday. I was getting my Genesis Mini and my Dreamer Edition, and I got like 4 Amiibo that came out that day. So yeah, me and my kid sat down. We were playing some, trying out some Genesis games. He was playing, we were playing some fighting games against one another, and that was good fun. The Virtua Fighter 2 on Genesis is bad. Just another hot take review there. Eternal Champions.
I don't know why did they include Virtua Fighter 2 from the Genesis?
It's something they could put on there for free. A first party.
Yeah.
And it's also, it's a fighting, like the system, there's 40 games, 42 games on there because they have the two bonus games, Tetris and Darius, which were never before released. Tetris is bad. I haven't gotten to play Darius yet. But it's still cool because it's Genesis Tetris. It's an interesting oddity. But the lineup is split perfectly between two-player games and single-player only games. So probably to make those numbers balance out, that's why you got Virtua Fighter 2 in there. Might have had something to do with that. It's really nice. Like, you can organize the games by their release date. So you can look at them chronologically. You can do it alphabetically, of course. Number of players. And genre is the other one, so that's nice. There's some fresh, hot menu music from Yuzo Koshiro, which is nice and appreciated. It's a nice little system. It's really cool. And it does suck that our version doesn't come with 6-button controllers out of the box, but
was a bummer.
Eternal, it only seems to really harshly affect Eternal Champions and Street Fighter II Special Championship Edition. Which, you know, my playing with my kid, he doesn't care. it's not really a problem. I mean, Virtua Fighter 2 only has 3 buttons and everything else is fine. So that was cool. There was that. And then also Apple Arcade dropped on Thursday.
I was going to say, you didn't bring up my favorite feature of the Genesis Mini.
No, what's that?
Being able to hold the start button for 6 seconds and go back to the main menu.
Oh, yeah, absolutely, yeah.
I love it.
Oh, what doesn't do that? You have to press reset on the SNES Classic, don't you?
Yeah.
Yeah, it has individual save states for each game. But yeah, you just hold down start, goes back to the main menu. But yeah, Apple Arcade opened up on last Thursday, and that starts with a free 1-month trial, and I love free, especially when it means free access to a ton of games just right off the bat.
Oh, yeah.
There's a ton of games. So I like checked out Choo Choo Planet because I'm a Dreamcast sucker, and that game's fine. I mean, what I loved about the original Choo Choo Rocket was the multiplayer, and Choo Choo Planet, you know, it's clever little like single player puzzle stages. It's not bad. It looks good. Like, it plays fine. It's just, it doesn't like blow my world away. What did blow my world away was Sayonara Wild Hearts, and that game's awesome. I love that game. I've already played that. I mean, the game's only like an hour and change to get through, but I've already started replaying it. It's really cool. And if you have an iPhone, you should really just sign up. You should sign up for the trial anyway, because there's a bunch of games to check out, but especially if you can just play Sayonara Wild Hearts for free, and that's pretty great.
I fucked up bad, because I didn't realize that canceling ended it right away. I thought it was just turning off the auto renew.
Oh no, Joe.
Yeah.
You fool.
I am a fool.
Though really, like, I mean, I guess, you know, if you paid for a month, they'd probably, like, it would go until you canceled.
Yeah.
But yeah, you don't get your month. Fucking.
It doesn't really bother me that much. Like, I downloaded a ton of games, and every single one of them I played for about 5 minutes, and that was it.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm not a phone gamer, so.
I'm not usually either, but it's free stuff, so I will poke and prod at it, at least for the month. Like, I know you can just straight up pair normal-ass controllers to it now. I'm just, like, yeah, I'm not
Xbox
really
Xbox and PlayStation. I have a controller synced up to my phone.
Yeah, I don't really, I'm just kind of, like, poking and prodding until it, once it's on iPad, then I will probably sync up a controller, and I will sit in front of my iPad and play some games. But on the little phone screen, like, other than Sayonara Wild Hearts, which was still, you know, cramped to play, but I really wanted to play, and it was really cool. I've downloaded a few other things to check out, like, you know, maybe half dozen other games just to take a look at, and we'll see. But it's neat. It's cool. And then Google's like immediately out the door like, oh shit, we got a subscription service too. Yeah, check us out. Woo!
Just like, yeah, I saw they had something. And was that announced before or was that a surprise? Hey, look what we have.
Don't know. I feel maybe they said something about it and I just forgot about it. It just felt like, you know, Apple kind of took the wind. If there was any wind in Google's sails for their, because Google has been, you know, concentrating on Stadia as well they should. For better or worse, but that's their, it seems their main product. And that's what they've been banging the drum about. And then, you know, Apple comes out and here's Apple Arcade and it launches, you know, whatever, it was like a week after they announced it. So people were like, ready, you can get in for free. And then, I don't know, Google just sloughing out like, oh yeah, we can do this shit too here. Check it out. And I'm like, eh. I mean, guess maybe I will, but, it seems like Apple definitely has their crap a bit more together, for their games thing.
Yeah, I want to play more.
Yeah.
I had fun with what I played. I didn't realize it just canceled it right away.
Yeah, speaking of cancellation pain, I always subscribe to New Japan World for the summer to watch the G1 Climax tournament because it's awesome. It's definitely well worth the $20 for 2 months to watch, you know, however many shows of great matches and Japanese wrestling drama that is. But then I was like, it was getting to the end of the month. I was like, oh crap, I got to cancel this. I canceled it 3 minutes after they charged me.
Oh, like,
while I was in there canceling it. And then I went back to my email and then there was the charge and then there was the cancellation right above it. And I was like, oh, what? Oh no. What? And I tried to like argue with them on PayPal and PayPal's like, no, you canceled it after you paid them. So that's it. I'm just like, because they cut off your access right then and there. So I paid $10 for 3 minutes of New Japan access.
Oh, that sucks. So I'm not the only fool.
No, well, I didn't feel like a fool because it was still August 31st here. It just happened to be September 1st in Japan. So
yeah,
if I had just remembered 5 minutes earlier, it would have been fine. whatever. I can't
dwell
on it. It is, as they say, what it is.
Anyway, should we get to work?
Yeah, we got to get to work here. There's games to talk about.
A lot of games to talk about. Some big stuff coming up. We're going to kick things off with Ori and the Blind Forest Definitive Edition, developed by Moon Studios, published by Microsoft Studios, released September 27th on the Nintendo Switch for $19.99. That is so weird to say.
I'm sorry, what? Released on the what?
That is so weird to say. First off, it's weird to say published by Microsoft Studios on this show. That's pretty cool.
That's a first.
But also Microsoft. A first, released September 27th on the Nintendo Switch.
Yeah.
For $19.99.
Wild.
The forest is dying after a powerful storm sets a series of devastating events in motion. Ori must journey to find the courage and confront a dark nemesis to save the forest. Tim, tell us about Ori and the Blind Forest Definitive Edition.
Definitive Edition. Wow. Yeah, so this is, I mean, obviously this is crazy and weird. There is a first-party Microsoft game coming out as a third-party game on the Nintendo Switch.
Yeah.
It's just wild and cool. So Ori and the Blind Forest, this game came out back in 2015, 2016, 2015. 2015, that's right.
It's been a while.
Pre-child. Yeah, so it's a little over 4 years old. Has a sequel coming out early next year. So, yeah, this is obviously it came out on the Xbox One. It was not a 360 game. Yeah, Xbox One and Windows at the time, which is where I first played Ori. It is a Metroidvania. It takes place in this big forest. You play as Ori, who my child points out looks like Mewtwo. that's his contribution to this review. This game is freaking gorgeous. Even now, 4 years later, playing on the Switch, like, it looks phenomenal. And in playing it, like, there was no hitches to the slowdown. Like, the game is 720 handheld, 1080 when docked. And it looks great, you know, either way, but they're definitely, like, it's weird. I'm usually not much of a snob about resolutions, but I could see that little pump playing it docked, just for like the detail of some of the stuff in the world. But yeah, it's just a gorgeous game here. Yeah, the intro to this game is still a fucking heartbreaker, let me tell you. I forgot, like, this is, it's sort of like the video game equivalent of the beginning of Up a little bit. It's just like, oh my god, I forgot about that. Like, once I got into it, I'm like, oh no, this, oh god, they let you skip the prologue if you don't want to feel the feels again. Or if you, well, honestly, I shouldn't say again, because I feel like a lot of people will probably be coming to this game for the first time. Like, if you don't have a PC that plays, you know, is decent for playing games on, and you don't have an Xbox One, like, this is a massive opportunity for people to check out Ori.
Oh, yeah, definitely a lot of new eyes coming to the franchise.
Yeah. You start off in the woods, and some sadness happens, and you have to go on this journey basically to restore the health of the woods. And the game takes place in a 2D Metroidvania style, where, yes, there are so many Metroidvania games these days. There were slightly less Metroidvania games back in 2015, though it was still a burgeoning, the genre was burgeoning again and bubbling and growing. So you run around the forest to attack. You have like this little light orb over your head, and you just kind of tap the button near an enemy, and it automatically homes in and shoots them. Mainly so you can continue to work on dodging or just moving through the environment at the same time. The focus of the game is much more, it's a much more movement-focused Metroidvania than like a combat-focused one. I mean, there is certainly plenty of enemies and boss fights to get through, but it is the focus of the gameplay is mainly on your movement through the environment, the moves that you get, and utilizing those in concert with enemies. So you will very quickly get a like wall climb, wall jump. You get your standard issue Metroidvania double jump. gotta have one of those. You get one where you can like lock on to certain objects in the environment or enemy projectiles or enemies themselves, which then you kind of aim, it will rocket you off in a particular direction. Or if you lock onto an enemy projectile, it will launch that projectile in a particular direction. So, you know, you'll have these instances which are almost like reminiscent of an indie platformer like Super Meat Boy, where you have to make some pretty precise jumps and movements and wall climbs and like dodge some spikes, jump up some walls, jump off like, oh, there's an enemy there. And then you use that slingshot thing to rip off the enemy and go flying even higher, that sort of stuff. So it can certainly be, challenging, especially like they're playing on normal difficulty. I guess I'll say that there is an easy difficulty for those that want a more chill experience. But on normal difficulty, this game can be definitely a bit hard. Like early on, like there are enemies you only have, you know, three, four. Once you start out with three life points, and eventually, you know, you start finding things in a Metroidvania fashion. When you go off the beaten road or solve a little puzzle, you'll find upgrades to your health or your spirit meter or, you know, you'll find experience stuff for skilling up. But early on, like, some enemies will just toast you in, like, one or two hits, because their attacks will do, like, a full three damage or two damage, and their spikes might do two damage. So you can find yourself dying really quickly early on, if you're not careful. And I guess I'll, like, unload my one big gripe with the game here. So the way the saving works in this game, which is like the very definition of a double-edged sword, is you basically make your own save points. You manually save, but you can do it just about anywhere, so long as you're not on like a flimsy platform or surrounded by enemies. You can spend like one of your little spirit energy orbs to drop a save point. So if you are coming up on a particularly challenging area, you can drop your save point right beforehand. The only problem is you don't necessarily know you're about to get screwed until you get screwed, and then you might be screwed.
Yeah.
and you know, you can blame it on me for forgetting to save often enough, but it's definitely frustrating when, you know, most modern games have some kind of like an autosave, some kind of a solid autosave system in them, or your your character is more durable. But Ori is not a durable character, and there is no auto-saving, so it's very easy to, like, you know, kind of get into a flow and be like, okay, I'm exploring over here, I do this, oh, I found an upgrade up here, and then it's like, oh, I missed this jump, or, you know, I got caught in some spikes, or this enemy just got me and I didn't realize how low on life I was, and then you die, and then you respawn at the checkpoint, and you're like, oh, crap,
I gotta do it again.
You literally have to do every little thing. Like, it doesn't save any, like, items you picked up. It doesn't, it saves zip, nothing. Zero is saved. Doesn't save any experience you gained, any items you found, nothing. And, you know, you kind of, on one hand, kind of have to train yourself to, you know, remember to drop the save points often, but a lot of times it can just be frustrating. It's a very flexible system, but it can definitely bite you in the ass. And I really wish that they kind of met you partway and were just like, okay, if you went out of your way to grab this item, you don't have to do that again. You know, keep my map completion something. I really wish it did that. It just drives me nuts, especially because death can come so hard and so fast in some areas of this game. But anyway, I mentioned that you do get a... you do get, along with your life, you do get like a spirit meter thing that you use to drop checkpoints. You can use it to do these, charge blasts with your little energy orb doodad. And there's other things you can do with it as well. As you have like a skill tree, which you use to unlock better abilities and moves and items. And it's a pretty, there's like three branches on it. Which, you know, focus on like movement, attack, or like more utility stuff. One I do really appreciate that one of the early unlocks will just start, it'll just show you where stuff is on the map around you, like where the upgrades and stuff are, which is super convenient and was not, you know, not a common thing and still isn't really a super common thing in Metroidvania type games, but I really appreciate them giving you that early on. But the game, you know, and the bottom line is it's just super well made. Like, the environments are varied and look amazing. The enemies are, you know, well designed and varied. The journey you go through is really cool and filled with, like, cool and, you know, lonely, like, very emotionally evocative moments as you're going through this forest. Like, you know, one of my favorite moments in the first third of the game, like the early part of the game, is when you restore like the water spirit in this giant tree. And then once you do that, like the tree starts to fill with water and you have to escape from this water, like rushing up the tree to get in. You're trying to get to the top and like, it just looks really cool. And like, you know, the gameplay that it's making you do is cool. And like the swell of the musical score is like, it's just a really great moment in the game where everything works together really well. And the score to this game is amazing.
No lie. Like, you talking about that is like giving me goosebumps. That moment.
Yeah. It's a really good moment. Like, I got, you know, having played this game before, like
thinking of the music playing too.
Yeah. Yeah. Like that theme and that score is really good stuff. Like, there was definitely moments, just even like replaying, like reliving moments in the game where I started to get, I'm like, man, I'm getting like little nerdy chills here. Like, geez, like this, there's like, man, like 4 years later. And I clearly remember like some of these moments and like, it still just like hits you. But yeah, the score can definitely not be understated. It's phenomenal. And it complements the tone and the mood of the game really, really well. It's a great game. There's a reason why I think, you know, it's considered kind of a modern classic of the genre. I was trying to see what was in the definitive, what they added to the definitive. Oh, I didn't know Ori was in Rivals of Aether.
Yeah.
That's crazy. Huh. How about that? Go Ori. Kick some butt just like Mewtwo. Yeah, so I mean, I guess the bottom line is that, you know, even, you know, 4 years on a new platform, like the, you know, this game certainly holds up in pretty much every department.
So if
I can think of.
Obviously, for people who are new to this series, this is an absolute must own. What about those of us who own the game already on Xbox One? Is there a reason to come back and double dip? Do you think the portability of it is enough to sell you on it?
That would be, well, that's, I guess, I mean, you know, if you're coming back 4 years later, and I certainly double dip plenty when it comes to getting games portably.
Especially on the Switch.
Yeah, especially on the Switch. And I mean, this is going back to like, I don't know how many ports and stuff I've bought on Nintendo systems past. Like some games, it is just nice to be able to have portable. It's, you know, this version of the game drops absolutely nothing from the original. And like, yeah, if you want to warm up to, you know, kind of if you're coming back to it. Yeah. And you want to re-enjoy the game before the sequel comes out and you want to do it on the go. Like, yeah, absolutely. Like, I mean, I think $20 alone is worth it for a portable version of this game. I think it's a buy it pretty much all around, really.
That is very good to hear. My pre-order is already placed. I'm thrilled to see it come to the Switch. There's no Xbox integration, is there?
I forgot to mention that. No, there is no direct, like, Xbox. You don't, like, sign into your Xbox Live account, though it does. Like, the achievements are still there, though they are just, like, achievements within the game, basically. I mean, that's what many non-Xbox, non-PlayStation games have done for years.
Yeah.
So they're still there to pursue, but they're not going to add to your gamer score or anything like that. But they're there, and it would have been really crazy if, like, they just left in the same, like Xbox UI X popping up with it. But no, it's a different, like, little graphic that pops up in the corner. So
that would have been funny.
Yeah. There's two new areas over the original version, but I figure most people have probably touched that by now. I mean, I guess, like, if you only played the original and you never played the definitive edition, like, what better time than now to check out two new areas of the game? They added the difficulty levels. And the fast travel system is new. I mean, this is stuff that was new in the definitive edition, but that's still, you know, a few years old. But
yeah.
Yeah, I don't think there's anything new for
the Switch release. Switch.
Yeah.
Except the fact that it's on the Switch.
It's on the Switch. It's portable. I think it makes sense. I don't think you're going to see every Microsoft developed first party game, like, suddenly start flying over the Switch. But I think, you know, this is a game that really fits and makes sense. Just like, it is a few years old now, but it's still relevant. They have a sequel coming out that they want to get people interested in. You never know. Maybe in a few years you'll see the sequel to Ori on here. Maybe you'll see Ori in Smash Brothers. Ori to Smash.
That would be awesome. No lie, that would be pretty awesome. One more game to talk about. That is called Island Maze, developed and published by Dragius Games. Released September 20th on the Switch for $2.99. When you're a cube, even a simple island becomes a puzzling maze. It's time to shine and bring out the best in you. Collect keys, climb steep walls, and manipulate your surroundings to finally reach the portal. Tim, tell us about Island Maze.
Oh, man. A bit less to talk about here. So Island Maze is a cool little puzzle game. And things are pretty straightforward. You have these little grid-based islands, basically. The game is not trying to bog you down with story and fluff and flair. It's a pretty straightforward puzzle game. You have these grid-based islands, and you are the aforementioned cube. So the idea is, and like what kind of all the puzzling of the game is built around, is manipulating a cube in 3D space. And the idea that, okay, so yeah, you have to pick up keys, right? So you'll have your grid, and you'll have your little green key over here. So you have to, like, you know, flip roll your cube over there, and you'll pick it up with, like, one side of your cube. But then to get it, like, onto the I guess door, it's a door that'll kill you if you roll over it without a key, or you roll over on the wrong side. You have to line things up so that when your cube rotates on top of that door, the key goes into it, and then thus opens it, and then you can roll past. Uh-huh. Mm. So that sounds simple, but let me tell you, it's a fucker. like, sometimes just trying to get this damn thing to like, rotate and roll the way you want it to, but...
I'm so glad I'm not the only one who feels that way.
Oh, my God. It's like, nice and simple, like, those first few levels, but then eventually you're just like, okay, goddamn, I know, I just gotta get you facing this way, in this square, and then you gotta do this, and like, why you... basically what it comes down to. Because, yeah, very, you know, they're like, okay, well, here's one key. Now, this level has two keys, so you need to get the keys in line. So say, like, the doors are right next to each other before the exit. So you need to make sure those keys are on adjacent sides of the cube. They can't be on opposite sides of the cube, or else you're not going to be able to do it. But then you need to get them on adjacent sides of the cube. You need to roll that sucker over there, get it lined up. So that way, when you do two rolls, it's like, key, key, and then you're through. And that's where things, you know, that's where the heat of the puzzler starts to pick up. It starts to really pick up once you can, yeah, climb up walls. Because they give you there's a thing you have to like you're putting like a tread basically on one side of the cube, so that way when you rotate onto a wall, which can be rotating up or rotating down, that your cube will then cling to the wall and then you can move forward. And then it's like, okay, well, you need to pick up treads so that you can go multiple spaces on the wall, and you need to pick up treads, and you need to pick up a key into a particular tread, so that way you can climb, climb, drop a key, climb, climb, and then fall in the right spot so that you know, and that is how the game escalates. Basically, the game only has, a couple dozen levels, but you're not going to just, unless you're like some super wizard at this type of puzzler, you're not just going to zip through it in a session and be like, ah, I'm done. Wow, this game was easy. Like, no. This game is going to push you back and make you frustrated and make you come back to it later to, try again, just, you know, hammer against the puzzle. But, you know, I think that simplicity works in its favor, and especially with a game that is $3, doesn't need a lot of flair and complexity. It just needs to push your brain a little bit. It has a decent amount enough of levels, a decent enough number of levels, and you know, you can just pick it up and play it real quick on the Switch. That makes it a pretty, you know, it's at that price point and with what the game offers, like it's hard not to recommend it for someone looking for a good puzzler. Like, you're gonna get your value out of this game. You're gonna have a good time. You're gonna have your brain teased. And you're probably gonna enjoy it for $3. Just buy it, man. I mean, if you don't want a puzzle game, don't. But if you want a puzzle game, buy it. Like, it's $3. And it's rock solid. Like, there's, you know, it does exactly what it needs to do.
Which is all you need in games these days. Just do what sometimes. You gotta do.
Sometimes. Yeah, do it. Sometimes that, yeah. Sometimes I want you to do a little more than just what you need to do. But sometimes you just need to, you know, just I want a puzzle game. This is perfect for that, you know.
And $3.
There's a lot of those little, like, you know, we talked about Blockapix, you know, I think earlier this year. That's like another good example. Just good, simple, little, cheap puzzle game. This'll tease your brain, does its job, not a lot of flair to it, you know. It does the work, right?
Indeed. Tim, always a pleasure having you on chatting about these games. Do you have any final words before we move on?
Oh, man. Just been like, I just, what do I want to talk about? I don't know. Just Sayonara Wild Hearts. You should, like, we were trying to get it into review, and it doesn't look like it's happened. But, man, just, you could play that game for free on the iPhone, and it's real good. I love it.
All right, moving on. Next game to talk about is called The Sojourn, developed by Shifting Tides, published by Iceberg Interactive. It released September 20th on Xbox One, PS4, and PC for $24.99. Traverse a thought-provoking puzzle game in its immersive, color-drenched world of light and shadow. In The Sojourn, you arrive in a mysterious land where the lights guide you forward. It's not long until the world reveals itself to be full of challenges. Now you must overcome these intricate and ever more demanding obstacles to uncover the nature of reality. Checking this one out. Dark Mika, how are you doing?
I'm alive.
That's the running theme whenever I ask anyone how they're doing. It's just, I'm alive.
That's because they all stole it from me. I was the one who started saying that.
I think Cole started it.
Nah, she got it from me too. I've been saying that for fucking years. I rarely ever feel anything other than alive. I'm surviving. It's good enough. Just
yeah. So how's the sojourn?
It's pretty good, but it's also kind of hard. It's a first-person puzzle game. I don't know who exactly you play as. There's no names or anything, but you walk around solving puzzles, and every now and then you suddenly statues come out of nowhere, just like most of the rest of the world. The light kind of just makes things appear and exist, including your pathways, which is really interesting, as well as the background and stuff like that. So, like, buildings will pop up, or trees will pop up, stuff like that. Really cool. But this, you see these statues pop up that tell the story of a young man. You see his parents with him when he's just a little baby, and you see him grow up and go on to do things. I don't really understand exactly what all's happening in that story, and I don't know if that's supposed to be your character story or just some other schmuck. I'm not sure. But it's kind of cute looking. You get them very rarely. You get like one or two per each little world that you have. I call it world because I have no other good way of saying it, because it's effectively a hub world where you go and you do the puzzles through, and once you complete all the puzzles, you go to the next hub world. And it doesn't look like you can go backwards, which kind of sucks, because there's merits, are what they called, which are just little scrolls that have little words on them, like, don't beat a dead horse or whatever. Just little weird little sayings that work. Like, it's not everything is as it seems. That's a merit. It's like, okay, that's really good thing to write in a scroll and just leave there. Not everything's as it seems. All right, yeah, that teaches me everything. So weird. And they're found in the levels, in some of them. Not every level has a merit in it, but lots of them do. All the bonus levels do. In normal levels, if it has a merit, there's a normal ending to it. And there's also, after you get to that area where you can end that level, it creates another pathway, so you can go and get the merit. And once you get the merit, it automatically ends the level there, regardless. Which is why it sucks that you can't go back, because if you want to get all the merits, which is an achievement, you have to get them before you move on, or else you can't go back to get them.
That's a bummer.
Yeah, especially since some of the environments are really nice. Like, you start off in this, like, desert town-looking area, and then you end up going to this big tower, and once you get to the top of that, you walk off its roof, basically, and poof, you're in another place, and I believe it's a forest at that point. And then you go past the desert and into this dark building that I haven't actually finished yet. And after that, I'm sure you go at least one more area, because I'm just shy of 80% of the way through it. There's at least 60 levels. I'm thinking closer to 80.
Oh, damn.
Yeah. The basic levels are fairly easy to get through in general. Getting all the merits is very fucking difficult. And some of the bonus levels are fairly hard, but they all just compound the information. So there's different difficulties for the levels, for the area you're in, and they change at random how many are in it. And they're all numbered, 1, 2, whatever. Usually it's 1 to 4 is the normal. And then sometimes there's a couple bonus ones as well. But if you start at 1 and you go around, it just gets progressively harder. So you do have build up, and they all just compound on everything you've learned before, which makes it really, really nice and friendly, even if some of them are not very friendly fucking puzzles. I've spent hours on some of these puzzles. It's bad.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, some of them get tricky. Like, I spent over an hour on one puzzle one day, and I think I spent like 2 or 3 hours on it, and I just was like, I give up, I'm going to bed. The next morning, I took a shower, in the middle of the shower, I'm like, motherfucker, that's how you solve that? it's so easy. And then I went and I solved it in like less than 5 minutes. I was like, you son of a bitch.
That's how it always is. When you least expect the answer to pop up, that's when you get it.
Yeah. These puzzles are all basically get to the end. And you do that through, typically through going to the dark world, which you mentioned. And it's literally just that. It's nighttime, basically. It's effectively what it is.
So it's a literal dark world.
Yes. There's little pads that you walk on that give you dark energy, I guess is what it is, that keeps you in the dark world. And as you move, that energy goes down. But while you'll have that energy, you can activate different constructions, basically. Some of them allow you to switch position with you, so you can get further, so you don't have to walk that far, losing all your energy. You can walk to where you're about out of energy, turn around, zap it to you, and then go back to where you got your energy from, and then zap to it immediately, and you've covered all that distance without using any energy. And you can just keep doing that to get further and further and further. And some levels require that. There's a harp-like instrument that you can start that builds, fixes bridges and stuff, so you can walk past them. Otherwise, they're just floating debris. In the dark world, there are paths that show up that you can only access in the dark world, be it bridges that don't exist in the light world. There's also hindrances in the dark world. Sometimes there's these weird big old grouping of like thorns coming out of the ground, more or less spikes is the word I'm looking for, that stick out of the ground. And as long as you're in the dark world, they're there. But once you lose that energy, you can go right by because they've disappeared. There's a few other different things, like a floating eyeball, basically, that if you look at it, you can stay in the dark world as long as you're looking at it. But once you turn around, you immediately drop out of it, which is some you get in the later levels. It's things like that. And it's just get from the beginning to the end. It's really all it is. It gets amazingly fucking difficult. There's, I think, 50 merits, I believe, because there's an achievement for 5, 10, 20, 30, 40, and all. So I have to assume that 50 is all of them.
Watch it be like 52, just to mess with everyone.
That could be very well. There's at least 50, I'm sure. Some of those are just bonus levels, in that there's no other end other than to grab the merit. But most of them are in just normal levels where you have an end, or you can go get the merit and automatically end that way too. It's pretty good. The bright areas are really bright sometimes, though. Some of the environments are just a bit too much. I found one where you went into a well and the water effects screwed me up really badly, because the water drains and you see it drain, and I don't know, just something about it screwed me up. I did not like that.
Weird.
Yeah, but the rest, the environments are all otherwise, they're beautiful. It's very bright, very colorful. It doesn't look realistic. It's all, I don't know if anyone's played State of Mind, but that weird polygonal look that everything had in the promotional stuff of that, that's what the entire world in Sojourn looks like. It's really interesting. I really like it.
Nice.
And that's pretty much it. For $25, if you like puzzles, this is for you. If you don't like puzzles, this is fucking misery, and you're never going... you're going to fucking hate this. Because this is going to be like a 30, 40-hour game for most people, I believe. I think I've spent just shy of 30 hours on it.
So there's a lot of content.
Yeah. If you have a walkthrough, it'll probably take you like 10 or so, but without a walkthrough, you're gonna get stuck a lot.
If you have a walkthrough, so you're a cheater.
I'm going to be a cheater, because I've spent like 5 or 6 hours on this one puzzle and I can't figure it out. So I'm waiting for a damn walkthrough just so I can get through this fucking area so I can continue. She's like, I just need this merit and I can continue. I just want it. But, oh, boy. Yeah. So, yeah, it's good. I totally suggest it.
Awesome. Sounds good. All right. Well, Dark Mika, always a pleasure having you on chatting. Do you have any final words before we move on?
I started Rocket League. Cole convinced me to play it.
Oh, no.
Yeah. I already have 26 or so achievements in it. I've only played 3 days.
I'm sure she'll be thrilled to hear that because she's actually up next. We have a party cast coming up next. So I'm sure you'll be in chat.
Probably. Yeah.
All right, moving on. We've got a big group party going on here. Cole's here, Purnell's here, Chris is here. How is everybody doing?
Smashing.
this is an evening, that's for sure.
It is. It is party time. We just spent a half hour talking. Is there anything left to talk about?
Patreon.
Patreon subscribers, if you check out, you can find a half hour long.
If you're a Patreon headquarters, it looks like we've got our first patron. It is Scott Smith.
Oh, snap!
Whoa, that was fast.
1,342. Nice.
If it was that many Scott Smiths, then this is our job.
We'll be on
now.
Your doorstep in 45 minutes to thank you.
Hey! No one understands any of these.
In jokes that were made 30 minutes ago.
So the people in stream get it, but everyone else is just absolutely clueless right now.
Sucks to be all, you should have been here.
Magic. Yeah, you should have been here on the day that we never do this.
Look, you know, we've done this 2 weeks in a row now. This is a thing.
This is a routine at this point.
It's a magic routine.
Ooh.
But, yeah, honestly, thrill the White Claw.
Wait, what?
Just don't like saying White Claw. I have absolutely never had that damn beverage. People won't shut up about it. It's apparently in shortage territory now. And I can't fathom what the appeal is with alcoholic water. It doesn't click for me in any capacity.
Like, yeah, that flavor. Sounds absolutely, like, isn't it seltzer water? Like, I don't like seltzer water to begin with. Why would you put alcohol in there and make it taste even worse?
It confounds me. Like, I drink, flavored waters, quote-unquote, but it's not so much for the taste. It's just, hey, if I need to drink something that's not sugary and not bad for me, but I want the bubbly, I'll drink this beverage. And it's not because it's good. It just kind of works, you know? It's a thing you drink.
It satiates the craving for carbonation.
Bam!
Not necessarily the sugar or the sweetness. Because, like, I do the same thing. I don't want it to be sweet. I don't want it to be fruity. I just want it to be bubbles.
Bam!
Hang on a second. Non-drinker here. Well, if that is the case, then what's a gin and tonic?
Gin and tonic, I mean, that works too, but here's the thing, and that's what makes this even funnier. So, gin and tonic is gin with tonic water, right? It's a mixed drink, and it does the job at a bar. It's like, hey, I want to get this thing mixed or whatever. But, honestly, I honestly feel like gin and tonic was never all that special to me either. It was that drink I ordered at the bar, and I just wanted something really light, but also wanted to feel like I was drinking with the guys. Okay. And yet, with... I guess in some respects, maybe that's what the appeal of White Claw is, but let me see.
Dude, I had White to stop Claw, for a second. Gin and tonic for white chicks.
I had to stop for a second because I noticed that my flashlight turned on mysterious. I was like, oh shit, I got to turn that off. But yeah, it's like, I guess I could see someone wanting to drink that at a party if they just wanted. They wanted to feel like they're drinking with the guys and have a light beverage too. But that's not what people are using White Claw for. They're drinking it like it's the hot shit. Like it's this delicious new drink on the market. We're running out of White Claw here. And if I'm not mistaken, it doesn't even have the appeal of gin and tonic because it still has additives and crap in it. So you're still not really getting that substitution. It's just literally alcoholic flavored water.
So, like, because they're obviously just hiding cases of these in the back, they're basically GameStopping it.
Yeah. I like to trade this used can of White Claw.
They're like, it's rare and wonderful, and you can't get it. And
like, I don't even see the point in it. My sister was talking about it. I don't know. Cool JT is asking, did White Claw just come out or something? This is the third time I've heard it brought up. I don't know. I don't understand where it came from, why it's popular. I don't understand it at all.
Let me go to know your meme.
My best understanding, while she's doing that, my best understanding for it is just that it was a beverage that got released, and some people drank it, as people do, but then there was a video that got put out. It wasn't even a commercial, it was just some internet guy who did a video of himself drinking White Claw with shades on, and he was acting like he was this really cool, rebellious guy for drinking White Claw. And the famous line from that ad was, there's no law with these claws.
Oh, my God.
So people started quoting it ad nauseum. The drink started selling like gangbusters. It was at everybody's freaking house. I don't know. Meme culture pretty much boosted this damn drink. It just kind of vanished because they ran out of it, supposedly. Like Chris said, they probably pulled a GameStop or something. Get people rabid for it. Now it's going to come back out like Metal Falls. Like, hey, one last barbecue, motherfucker. Get them White Claws.
So it's been memed into existence. Okay.
Basically. My first experience with White Claw was a promotive video that I saw on Pinterest, and my husband, bless his heart, hates whenever I start a sentence with those words, but I saw on Pinterest, it was a video that had been promoted that somebody had made a cake that looked realistic, like a can of White Claw, and like, you didn't even know it was a cake, and then like, you see them take the knife and just cut it down the middle, and I'm like, I have no idea why this is supposed to be impressive. Man, what the fuck is this thing even?
Could you make a cake out of a more impressive beverage? That would be helpful.
I mean, Dr. Pepper, I'd have been like, fuck yeah, but it's White Claw, and I'm like, I don't even know what you are.
We took a cake and made it out of orange vanilla Coke. We even poured some into the actual batter.
Yeah, buddy.
They do that. There are Dr. Pepper cake recipes where they put Dr. Pepper in it.
And I'd eat that shit. And if they shape that recipe like a Dr. Pepper can, that's something worth pointing to. White Claw. Nobody's impressed.
There's something white going on there.
You guys are great.
I didn't think that the topic of discussion would be White Claw.
Nature finds a way.
No.
What is our problem?
White Claw. I don't want to talk about it. Oh my God. Lord.
Well, should
Ladies
we?
And gentlemen, this podcast today is brought to you by White Claw, alcoholic beverage.
Oh, geez. Yeah, that's the sponsor that we need.
Bring a White Claw.
I'm not even allowed to drink.
There's no laws with these claws, so we can swear however we want on the show. It's great.
Oh, we've been swearing as much as we want on the show to begin with.
Yeah, but they were
the law on this claw.
They were the secret sponsor. Now everybody knows the true reason for swearing on SML.
Now you guys are going to be getting me comments about why is the little boy cussing again.
No law with these claws, baby.
Oh, my God. Should we get to business here? There's a bunch of games that we got to talk about. You guys are going to take turns. You excited? Are you happy?
Yay!
Hooray!
Uh-oh. Wow. Somebody's getting into diet tonight.
Well, the first game that we're here to talk about is called Untitled Goose Game, developed by House House, published by Panic, released September 20th on the Switch for $19.99. Untitled Goose Game is a slapstick stealth sandbox where you are a goose let loose on an unsuspecting village. Make your way around town from people's back gardens to the high street shops to village green, setting up pranks, stealing hats, honking a lot, and generally ruining everyone's day. Chris, tell us about Untitled Goose Game.
Untitled Goose Game, possibly the only time an indie game has ever overtaken a Legend of Zelda upon release. Because both those games came out, and I sure haven't I sure haven't seen a lot of people like as many people talking about Zelda as Goose Game, but maybe that's just my circles.
Yeah, there's a lot of people talking about Goose Game.
Oh man.
The only people talking about Zelda is questioning the price tag on it.
Right. Okay, so Untitled Goose Game. Yes, this game, finally. We've been hearing about this thing for like about a year, I think. Just about. So, yeah, this is a game where you play a horrible goose being let loose upon a unsuspecting populace, and you are just the worst. just like, so I love just the idea that conjures in your head. Just first of all, like, that's the reason why I think people are so hype about this game, is that they're like, yes, finally,
somebody get to be a dickhead of a goose.
Yeah, somebody figured out what we've all been wanting this whole time.
That is pigeon pooper.
Yeah, yeah. Like, geese are, you know, it's funny because they're adorable, they're kind of goofy, they are mean, and they're vaguely scary. So it's like, this is the perfect protagonist for a game of this sort. And, yeah, the way that they pull it off is very, very cool. Like, the first thing it does when it pans into the beginning tutorial area where they teach you the controls is that it just goes into this, like, it just looks at this, like, this kind of brush, like, you know, there's some trees and some bushes and things like that, you know, like a little clearing, and then it says press Y to honk, and then as soon as you honk, you see the noise lines coming from the bush, and your goose was in there the whole time, and it was just, that's one of the most wonderful intros to a game. I don't know, that made me so, like, happy to see. And, yeah, you just immediately begin, you know, wobbling around. You can run, you can, of course, run with your, like, wings out, flapping at people to intimidate them. and then, of course, when you find trigger points, which are, you know, denoted by little lines on the screen, you can interact with an object, usually just by, you know, reaching out for it with your beak and then, you know, pulling it or pushing it or something like that. And then there's, like, a duck button to also, not duck like goose, but, you know, but, like, to actually duck your head down and, like, pick up things that are lower. So the tutorial is just, like, this little, like, 15-second thing where they just briefly go over the controls, and then you're just let loose. The only guidance you're really given is that, for some reason, it's in cursive on notebook paper, but you have an itinerary of different really terrible things that you're going to do to people who don't deserve it.
or do so, they?
Yeah, right. The very first item on the very first list is enter the garden. And so the door's closed. You can interact with the door and try and open it. You can also turn on a water spout outside of the garden so that, like, this water hose starts spraying everywhere, and then a gardener runs out to, like, stop it. And then you can run in, or you can actually come in through a secret hole in the garden and, like, disrupt the cabbages and, like, knock over a crate. and just from there, like, that's the way the whole thing expands, is that there's so many things that you can do, and the game is so alive with, like, really good AI that there's so many different ways that you can do things. So, like, your first list of tasks, and it's kind of like a tutorial stage one, is to just harass this one farmer, like this one garden keeper. And you have to do things like steal his keys and steal his hat, which is actually kind of a challenge because you can't reach his hat. So you have to figure out how to get him low enough to where you can take that hat. And, well, it's not even stealing his hat. It's getting him to wear the sun hat that's hanging up on the garden, the shed door. And, you also are tasked with making yourself a picnic. So you get, like, these various items that you have to put in a certain location, which is the picnic mat that's next to the water. And, yeah, just, like, the different ways that you can execute. Like, if you steal his keys, like, then you're done with the task, right? If you get them off his person, you're done. You don't have to swim out into the middle of the lake and drop the keys into the water, but that's what you want. That's what you can do, and that's what you want to do. so, yeah, it's just, like, it's absolutely just this thing of coming up with all these elaborate ways to prank people. Like, once you get into, like, the little village, there's a kid, and you have to make him put on the wrong glasses, quote-unquote, which involves stealing the wrong glasses from a shopkeeper who you eventually will lock into her own garage. And then you, like, well, maybe, you know, one way that you can do it is that you can drop the wrong glasses in front of the kid and then untie his very obviously carefully tied up shoelaces. And then he'll stoop down to, like, you know, tie his shoelace back up. Then he can steal his glasses and then make off with them and, you know, drop them into the sewer or whatever, which is available to drop things into. And then he'll pick up the wrong glasses and you're done. The other thing that you can do is just kind of wait. You know, you can do the same thing. Get the wrong glasses, put them in front of the kid, wait until he stops to clean his glasses, and then honk behind him so that it surprises him and he drops the glasses. And then you steal them and drop them in the sewer. And it's just
Jesus.
Like...
they by all the way, float down there.
The honk button, by the way, has unlimited ammo, and you can use it on anybody.
Unlimited ammo.
And if you do it in front of them, they get mad at you. If you do it behind them, they get confused. If you do it at the kid too much, he gets scared and runs away. And that's actually how you do your one task with the kid, which is to lock him into a phone booth.
That's amazing.
He has to be trapped, so if you just stand outside the phone booth honking at him for long enough, then he's technically trapped, and then but the thing is with this and everything else in the game, and this is I think what brings this up to like masterpiece level, is that nothing that you do actually really hurts anybody, and like, they all treat you like you're just an annoying goose. Like, nobody gets super mad at you. You don't get attacked, ever. You just get kind of, like, shooed away. And, no matter how badly you screw up this, like, the guy's garden or the woman's shop or anything like that, they'll just dutifully go and in real time, like, pick up every item and put it right back into place. And it's just up to you, like, how long and, you know, in what ways you want to torture people. Which is forever and in every way possible. It's so fun to play. The controls are really intuitive. The music is this wonderful, like, just a piano, kind of a jazzy, like, sort of, you know, it's a very, I don't know, like a very jaunty sort of thing. It kind of reminds me of Cubivore, if anybody knows, speaking of game stopping.
Oh, God.
That's a notorious game that they marked up artificially. Anyways. But it has like this delightful piano score. The graphics are the best way I can rate that I can talk about them is they're kind of like Katamari Damacy. So lots of polygons and lots of realistic movement, and like it looks great, but there's not like a whole bunch of texture in the polygons. So everybody kind of comes off as these just really elaborate and well animated but blank kind of characters. And yeah, it's just aesthetically and functionally, this game is pulled off absolutely perfect. Like, there is no way that you can play this and not be satisfied by the simulation of being a goose. The only complaint everybody else has had so far is that it's just too damn short. I haven't gotten through the whole thing yet, but it apparently doesn't go on for like a 40-hour game. It's a little bit lighter. Like, you know, you do a few different like locations and things like that, and then you're pretty much done. But it's not about that, really. It's about having the best time of your life while you're doing it.
Yeah. Well, overall, $20. What do you say?
$20. I mean, the hype is real. This is going to be one of those like long time classics. So I say go ahead and jump on it right now, because you're going to be, anytime somebody's going to come over to your house and you got your Switch on, they're going to be like, "Can we play the Goose Game?"
just go honk.
Yes, you're just gonna lay on that honk 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 like button, and it's pure joy. So yes, absolutely a must purchase.
Here's a tough question. You only have $20. Untitled Goose Game or Ori?
I haven't played Ori, so I don't know.
That's a tough question, huh?
Mm.
What would you do? Pernell, what would you do?
I'm gonna be kinda honest here. Ori's a cool game, but Untitled Goose Game is Untitled Goose Game. Can you think of many other games that give you that sort of weird experience? Because
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt, but the only one I can think of right now that's in the works is Crab Fighter.
Yeah.
Wait, what?
Crab Battle, I think is what it's
crab
called.
Crab Battle.
Do you outfit them with knives or something and they fight by scuttling?
Yes.
Oh, God. See, that's another one. So my Achilles heel in the gaming world is creativity, especially because I feel like we've hit an age where damn near everything's been done in some form. And then something like Untitled Goose Game comes along, and it is literally a game that while it obviously employs mechanics of other games that have come before it, I can't think of another experience like it. It's just dopey enough to be amazing. Like, if it's that in another game that's while awesome, is like, well, it's more stuff I've played in the past, just a little different. I got to go with the Goose. As long as it's a good game, of course. If the Untitled Goose can't have to be a turd, well, originality doesn't make a bad game good. It's just a bad game that's original. So.
True. Anyway, speaking of things that we've played before, Puzzle Quest, The Legend Returns.
Yes.
Developed by Infinite Interactive, published by D3Go, released September 19th on the Switch for $14.99. The totally remastered Puzzle Quest, The Legend Returns, features original Puzzle Quest, Challenge of the Warlords, the expansion Revenge of the Plague Lord, and a whole bunch of new quests, spells, classes, and items created exclusively for this version. Purnell, tell us about Puzzle Quest, The Legend Returns.
Honk. I'm sorry. I gotta get back to the groove here. So, Puzzle Quest, for those who may not remember, originally came out on the Nintendo DS. And I think the PlayStation Portable, too, though. I can't do that with that. I need the touchscreen for it. But anyway, it came out on those systems way back in the day, like mid to late 2000s, early 2000s. And it was a game that, even then, sizzled a lot of fires. It was a great little match three game that, in my opinion, set a pretty decent standard for what I could get out of a match three puzzle game.
Oh, yeah.
And I feel like this remaster or update or whatever did a great job of bringing it forward. So, first and foremost, and then I'll get into the gameplay proper. You start the game out with choosing a character class. The original game didn't have a ton of them. I remember it having like four or five or some number like that. I remember playing as a wizard. But this one has like 15 or 20. It had a pretty decent number of classes to choose from. And each class plays a bit differently in the form of like what skills they can learn, which in turn affects their entire gameplay style, of which I'll get into in a second. But once you do choose a character, it plops you onto a world map and sets you on a pretty solid, like, straightforward quest. All the classes have the exact same storylines. Don't feel like, depending on who you pick, it's going to alter the plot or anything. But at least for me, I wasn't all that focused on it. Eventually, I got sucked into the general gameplay. Though the writing, I will say, is still pretty decent for this style of game. So the way Puzzle Quest works is, as you are fulfilling quests or exploring the top-down world or the overworld map, you'll be going from location to location. And when you come across certain environments, you'll get into a combat sequence where an enemy will show up. And the way combat works is you get a giant grid, let's just say like a 12 by 12 grid or something. And the grid is populated by a variety of circles, which represent mana of various elements, skulls, purple shards, and coins. On each turn, you are trying to match a sequence of three or more of any of these things, which clears them from the board and adds something to your pool of resources. It does something for you. So the mana pools give you the actual mana that's attributed to that element. So if you match three yellow, you'll get three air element. Match three red, you get three fire element. If you match the skulls, you do direct damage to your opponent, almost like basically doing a physical attack or something. If you match the coins, you get some extra money. And if you match the purple gems, you get extra experience. Now, the purpose of the mana is that depending on the character you've got, you'll have a set number of abilities or skills that you'll have equipped to your character. And when you have the right amounts of different combinations of mana, you can invoke a skill. Some skills will do direct damage to opponents. Others will manipulate the field in some way. Others will just be real shitty douche-like. Like, it'll just remove a turn. Like, the character will lose multiple turns. There are some broken-ass abilities in this game. Usually the enemies are what's using them, but I digress. So,
cheating AI bastards.
Oh, yeah, they are. But it's interesting because the enemies, I have skills like this too, and on their turn, I'll be making the same attempts. And also, if you manage to get a break of four or more in one drop, you'll get an extra turn, which means it allows you to steal turns from the opponent too. Now, typically, you would think the match three gameplay style could get old real fast, but because of the skills and such on the characters and the ability to augment your character by buying items at shops in various towns and equipping them, each of which alters your gameplay style as well, your style of play, even though it's a simple match three game, changes enough so that the gameplay isn't so simple anymore. Then you get to do things like Citadel management, and you can actually spend money to upgrade your castle, which affects how you play. You can capture mounts and then use the mounts to get new skills too after you train and level them up. It's a deep freaking game. It goes down the rabbit hole something fierce. And it's interesting. Some people might say, well, that sounds like it'll get really boring very fast. Let me tell you something. I've been playing a game called Cartoon Network Matchland for like 2 freaking years, all right? This game is 100% free unless you do the microtransactions, which they really goat you to do. Otherwise, you got to do with the crap like energy management, and which means you're going to play a certain number of times a day, and you got to farm stuff, and the typical trappings of a mobile game, right? And that's a match three game, pretty much, with the different, but you're leveling up different characters. Well, guess what Puzzle Quest is? It's a match three game. You're leveling up a character and his mounts, and you can just do a bunch of quests related to these things, and you don't have to pay microtransactions for shit. You don't have to worry about paying out the wazoo for energy so you can keep playing the game you want. You can just play freaking Puzzle Quest. And fortunately, it is also a quality game to play. It's not just a bum steer play session. It's a great time. And the best part about it, pricing-wise, it doesn't fall into the trap that seems to have befallen the puzzle game genre over the last few years. People expect puzzle games to be cheap, not $40 like Sushi Striker was, which resulted in that game tanking. But this game comes at a sweet price point. It has a ton of content. And like I said, quite frankly, I love match three games that are done right. And I can easily see myself coming back to this game over and over again just to level up one more character and playing through it with them to see how their playstyle works, getting one more monster mount. And that's assuming I even finish the gameplay with one character, because there's hundreds of, I won't say hundreds, but there's tens of hours of gameplay for just one character.
Yeah, there is an insane amount of gameplay in Puzzle Quest. And the fact that they added more quests to what was already there with this new version is just absurd. And also something that is absurd is the fact that Cool JT just subbed to us on Twitch.
Yay, hey, thanks.
Yay for absurdity.
What's up, Cool JT?
Got to give a shout out to Root Beer's My Jam and some person named Eternal Raheje.
What for, a fuckhead.
Subbing before the show began.
Rahaje.
Chris, did you dabble in Puzzle Quest at all?
I did so much, I almost didn't play the Goose Game. Here's the thing. When this game came out, back in, I don't know, the 2008-ish, 9-ish, whatever, it came out on DS and PSP, PS2, Wii, and I played the DS version. Like, it was my whole life for like 6 months. It was crazy how much I played it. And it's because I really loved the touchscreen aspect of it. I didn't want to have to, like, you know, push the buttons around and, like, you know, drag and drop or whatever. Like, or, you know, do the way that it controlled on the consoles. And the Wii had the wand, which wasn't good at all. So, you know, I played this game to death and played through the entire story. And so I was not only thrilled that this Switch port retains the entire story that I still remember. It retains the quests that I still remember. Like, I totally grind the stolen catapult quest down in the, like, southern, like, town near the beginning of the game. Drakengard,
everyone does that.
Exactly, yeah. Like, it's really the best way to go. But, yeah, like, everything's there that I remember. But it has not only the HD like graphics that, you know, that I missed from having the really low res DS version. It also had the controls, which are now much better. It's like it really works with the twin stick really well. Like, you can move the cursor over to a thing and use the other stick to to play it, rather than having to push the A button on it and then move over and then, you know, push the A button. Like, less button pushes. But it also, it not only has the HD graphics, it also retains the touchscreen from the DS version. Yep, you can use a stylus or your finger or whatever. And yeah, it's just like, this is absolutely the ultimate iteration of one of my, literally, this is one of my top 20 favorite video games of all time. So,
damn.
Yeah, I was so happy to see it on Switch. Yeah, it really had a huge impact. This is like the ultimate way to enjoy that kind of bejeweled style of gameplay, because it actually has a point.
Yes, it's a freaking fantastic game.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to playing through these extra quests too, since I only played through the main quest originally. So yeah, I'm extremely happy with this port.
Nice.
Do you remember, since you played as much as you did, do you remember how many classes the original one had?
It only had like four, maybe six. I use Warrior and Paladin like almost exclusively. I think I dabbled with the Wizard, and then there was the Druid, and I think that was about, the thing is, like, between Puzzle Quest and this new version, I played Puzzle Quest 2, which actually does expand it, and I played as a thief assassin character or whatever they called it in that one, so, you know, I'm a little, like, mixed up on that. I haven't loaded up the original in a while.
Maybe that's what it is. Maybe they added a bunch of characters from Puzzle Quest 2 along with new classes as well. That would explain a lot.
The only thing I would say on the Switch version that, like, is a weirdly a kind of glitch that was retained from the original somehow, is that sometimes when you're matching up a really good combo, the game will kind of hiccup. It'll, like, freeze up for a second while it has to, like, guess, think about something. And that was a really bad problem on the DS version, and it was surprising to me to see it on the Switch version, too. But it's not nearly as bad, and it doesn't detract from the game. It's just one thing I would point out.
Yeah. It does detract from my personal performance, because I never had that glitch!
I've never seen someone upset about not having a glitch.
This glitch only appears to the truly devoted.
Oh, Lord. But $15 on Puzzle Quest. Pernell, what do you say?
I think Chris would clearly agree with me on this is a definite buy it title, worth your money and worth your time. Don't sleep on this title if you're a fan of puzzle games.
Yeah. Yeah, I have tried every other version available of, like, different Match 3 /RPG hybrids, including Gems of War, Puzzle Quest 2, Galactrix, which came out shortly after, and none of them did it for me like the original Puzzle Quest, and coming back to it, it pulled me in the exact same way, where I dumped, like, hours into it just this weekend, so absolutely agree.
Oh, yeah, wasn't Galactrix their attempted follow-up to Puzzle Quest?
Attempted, yes. So, yeah, this game
the
is...
The less said about Galactrix, the better, I'm sure.
Good thing the legend returned. Oh, no, he didn't, says Carnage.
Yeah, Carnage is feels that you saying Gems of War doesn't stack up to Puzzle Quest is fighting words to him.
Hey, I tried it, and I couldn't... I just can't with the like, the frickin', you know, free-to-play, but... You know, I did that for years with Pokemon Shuffle. And I never put one penny into Pokemon Shuffle, and like thousands, like hundreds of levels later, I'm just like, I don't think I actually had fun with this game.
Yeah, I think I just wrong.
Yeah, I just played it just because I had to get through my daily allotment, you know.
Mm-hmm. Just, and I've been there.
I was getting spoon fed this gameplay I didn't even care for. So yeah, $15 and you're done. That's perfect.
Bam. And also you got to figure, if that's fighting words, maybe the real statement comes out of this is, maybe this high praise is enough excuse to say, put Gems of War down temporarily and see what all the fuss is about with Puzzle Quest. You might come away pleasantly surprised.
Yeah, see where it all began.
He wouldn't play it. He can't get one achievement and never touch it again. Carnage has standards.
Oh, okay.
Oh, God. Anyway, next game to talk about is called Mabel in the Wood, developed by Triple Vision Games, published by Graffiti Games, released September 17th on Xbox One for $14.99, coming to the Switch October 10th. Hunt down massive beasts, and upon destroying them, shapeshift in their forms in order to use their powers to save or destroy the world. Players with less violent intent can find secret paths to complete Mabel without killing anything, including bosses. Pernell, tell us about Mabel and the Wood.
So, Mabel and the Wood is a... I'm so torn on this game, but I'll go into the why shortly. So, when I saw the trailer for this game originally, I think it was on like one of those Nintendo Directs, I was immediately interested in wanting to see what all the fuss was about, because the premise sounds really cool. You start out as a little girl who is summoned by a bunch of druid monks or whatever the hell they are, mystical folk, and they would like for you to kill a bunch of great creatures, and they don't tell you why. They just say, go forth and kill the great beasts, or something. So, you get up and you start doing that. However, as a little, you are literally a little girl of sorts, in that you are spawned with a giant sword, but you can't carry the sword. It's too heavy for you, so you're just dragging it very slowly behind you. And you can't jump. However, you do get a nice little ability, which allows you to transform into a fairy. And when you transform into the fairy, you drop the sword on the ground, and you are able to fly a short distance before your magic gauge runs out and you crash back to the ground. If you land on the ground of your own volition or otherwise, your magic gauge refills and you can do it again. Now, attacking in this game with your sword is interesting too, because since she can't swing the weapon, she can't fight with it by traditional means. So what actually ends up happening is when she turns into the fairy, she drops the sword. And when she flies to a new location and changes back, she can call the sword back to her. And if the sword collides with anybody on the way back, it does damage or kills them, which kind of retweaks the entire way you'd conceive combat in a game of this type, because you don't just melee guys anymore. Now, as you progress through the game, you'll solve like little, like, you know, simple switch flicking puzzles. You'll occasionally talk to like townsfolk who will say some honestly pretty funny dialogue. I honestly laughed at a lot of the dialogue in this game. And you'll just progress to solve puzzles and progress through the game. And as you come across any of these great beasts, you'll fight them in the form of a typical boss fight. And when you defeat them, you'll assume a shape related to that character. So, for example, you'll defeat a spider, become a spider. You'll defeat the spider queen and in turn become a spider. So now you don't just become a fairy. You can become a fairy or a spider. And you can choose which of the many forms you want to take by using the right thumbstick to just select it. And you can do this on the fly. So you could be the fairy flying through the air and then immediately toggle to the spider and then use the spider's ability to progress. And then there's other abilities too, such as like a golem, which allows you to like throw a rock. There is a mole, which allows you to dig into the dirt and other such things.
That this sounds interesting.
It really is. And it leads to a lot of really cool, like just exploration attempts, where you're able to like, okay, I can use this ability or this ability or this ability, and you can address it in a variety of different ways. Because one thing worth noting is that due to the fact that they designed the game to be beatable without defeating any of the bosses, it also means that you can beat the game solely using the default ability. This is a blessing and a curse, because what that means is you don't need the other abilities, but by having those abilities, it allows you to look at the world any way you see fit in attempts of trying to progress through it. Like, you might see a wall and immediately go, I wonder if I can dig through that wall. I'll turn to the mole and find out. Or, how do I want to traverse this chasm? Maybe I'll spider swing my way across it. So you'll be looking at different solutions. You'll see different solutions to different problems. And you might even come across solutions that other people didn't see. Now, honestly, everything I just described is awesome and splendiflorous. And honestly, those things are. And if that was all there was to this game, I'd be freaking jumping up and down all over the place with a glowing buy it recommendation. But there are some hiccups. Hiccups that hit it hard. So,
let's hear
it. Like I said, yeah, I gotta do it. So, like I said earlier, when you do the transformations, different things occur with the sword. So, for example, with the fairy, she drops the sword. With the spider, she kind of throws it. And while initially it's easy to like kind of tell yourself, okay, and under no stressful scenarios, it's easy to just go for the spider. I need to aim the sword, throw it there, and swing across this gap. Now, here's the hiccup. Let's say you're in a room with four bats and some bees coming after you, and you need to progress through this area with your transformation powers. You can't fight unless you fight using the backhanded ways I mentioned earlier with your sword, having it drawn back to you or thrown as the spider or what have you. What results here is some levels of serious frustration as you're trying to traverse the area while also dealing with opposition. And what starts out as this really cool puzzle solution thing is now again that's kind of forced combat into it in a situation where it really shouldn't have combat. You just want to explore and swing and find stuff. You want to look around. So you'll be fighting yourself with the controls, because the controls themselves also aren't 100% perfect. There are some hiccups there, like, for example, throwing the web, but you only want to throw it to attack enemies, not so much to swing, but you'll still kind of get pulled a little forward when you do the throw, which results in some hiccups and annoyances when you're trying to do platforming. It's annoying. It's problematic. But I kept trying and kept looking forward to see what I could do. Now, the second hiccup, maybe this wouldn't be so bad if at least navigation wasn't such a problem. If it was easy for me to get around and know where I was going to backpack and find stuff or backtrack and find stuff, no problem. Great times. However, they screw the pooch on the map, something that could be patched out, But until now, it has to be considered a hiccup. So early on, each area you enter into, there is no map. You're just kind of there. And occasionally or eventually someone will show up and say, here's this map. Hopefully it helps you get around. But it's just a static map. The rooms have symbols on them sometimes, but there's no legend telling you what the symbols represent. Furthermore, there's no indication of where you are on the map. It is literally just a map. And it's a big map. In some cases, multi-level rooms, but there's nothing telling you, like, say, for example, like this is like, let's say there's like three different levels to a giant room, right? Like just walkways. There's nothing on the map indicating that, which isn't necessarily a horrible thing, but it is when you don't even know where you are on the map, because that's one less thing to give you an indication to help you figure out where the hell are you? Nah. Where am I going? So it makes exploration a chore. To give you an example of what I mean by that, there was a point early in the game where you find a key which allows you to break open a door to a well and go down to it. I thought it was just going to lead me to a quick secret, but in actuality, the well led to a huge cave. And I started exploring this cave unexpectedly, thinking I was, again, in a secret area, because early on, you don't have a map for it, so I'm thinking I'm just in a big room. Turns out, it was a dungeon area. I go down this weird, narrow passageway that involves a deep, like, slide down, like a slide down to the bottom of it, and it was a locked door down there that I couldn't open up, so I had to go back. But going back meant going up an incline in a game when you can't jump, so you are constantly either trying to use the web or the fairy jump, but if you land, you immediately kind of slide back down. And there's also lava in this room, by the way, too. So you're trying to dodge the lava, make these jumps, and there's bats getting in your way. If the bat hits you, you get a recoil, which can knock you into the lava, which sends you back to the last checkpoint, and you're doing this over and over and over and over again, trying to get back to where you were as so you can retrace your steps. And then it's compounded by the fact that every once in a while, a bat would hit me and knock me out of the screen. So it would knock me into the wall, and then I would just fall into oblivion and have to die that way. And that happened a lot, a lot, a lot, a lot, a lot. And I was having fun, and then this part happens, which drove the frustration up to like 11. And I just kept pushing, because I was like, I got to review this game. I got to keep playing this game. But I'm not going to lie to you. If I got this game for free and it wasn't a review, I would have put it down right there. But if I paid for the game, or in the situation like I just had where I'm reviewing it, I pressed forward because I'm invested in them. So I kept going. And then eventually I got to another section. I was like, okay, this is a more straightforward area. I feel okay again for the time being. But nonetheless, issues like that did persist in other areas of the game too. It wasn't an isolated incident. And it is definitely something that really does hamper someone's enjoyment of a game when you're trying to progress. And this is stated, keep in mind, for those who are new to me talking on this show, I don't shy away from difficult and challenging games. I am fine with those. If I die a lot because of a skill session where I just can't pull off the moves and I got to get better, baby, I'll get good. It's not a big deal.
Yeah.
The problem is when the issue is not with me, but with the actual game itself, that becomes a hiccup for my game placements. It makes it a burden for me that I don't want to endure. So I feel as though a number of these things can be easily addressed via patches. So it's not like the game is dead on the water or anything, but it's definitely something worth mentioning. I feel as though if I did not state this, I would not be doing listeners a service. There's a hiccup there.
Well, as it stands, $15 on Mabel in the Wood. What do you think?
I'd say low tier, try it if you want to get down with this gameplay style, because it is a very creative way to play a game of this type. But developer, if you are listening, please look into fixing those issues, because I promise you, if you can knock that stuff out, this would be an easy buy, because it's just good every other which way. It's just those issues.
I'm a little bummed to hear about some of those issues, because I've been watching this game for a while and I was hoping it'd come to Xbox.
Yeah, like, I mean, it's a shame, because it's like you said, it's a quality, the concept is quality, the writing is quality, the graphics, in my opinion, are quality. It's just those things, and they're big things to me.
Yeah.
Like, imagine a Zelda game where you want to look for secrets, but the map is such a pain in the ass that you don't even bother to.
I've been there.
She's like, let me tell you about Link's Awakening.
No, geez.
Did you say Link's Awakening?
Oh, man. Next game to talk about is called Habroxia, developed by Lilymo Games, published by East Asia Soft, released September 26th on the Switch for $7.99. Blast your way through a myriad of extraterrestrial incursions in this arcade-style shooting scroller. Pilot the ship through 15 levels featuring intense boss fights, rescue missions, shifting perspectives, and untold surprises. Customize your ship to enhance your abilities. Unlock the three endless side modes, and save the galaxy from a series of sinister invaders. Chris, tell us about Habroxia.
Sinister invaders. That's how you say it.
Habroxia.
It's never stated in the game, so I'm thinking Habroxia. Yeah,
close enough.
Yeah, it's just a made up name. It's sounds one of like those
medication.
Yeah.
Ask your doctor about Habroxia.
Side effects include giant enemy robots and giant enemy robots and constipation. And people are like, ooh, I don't know, constipation.
I don't like that. Shitting giant enemy robots. It's not very comfortable.
I'm sure that's going to be a Switch shmup at some point. They got everything else. They're going to have that one. Okay, so Habroxia is an interesting shooter. It goes for a lot of things. Like, I was about to, like, categorize it like I always do. I always like to categorize my shmups or shoot 'em ups, if you prefer. By the way, slight tangent. I purchased and downloaded the game Beaker, which is Beaker Reloaded, rather, or something like that, which is a side-scrolling shmup that stars a bee, which kind of reminded me of a game from way back in the day that the title it just flew out of my head. But yeah, it's like it's a shmup with bees and you fight other insects and things like that. And there's an unskippable tutorial at the very beginning of the first level that stops you to explain what a shoot 'em up or shmup actually is.
Oh God.
Oh God.
it's like a lesson that nobody asked for. And
video games were developed back in 19.
That's kind of how it was. It was like a shoot 'em up is a game where you play a small ship who is fighting other ships. Sometimes it's called a shmup or just simply an STG. I'm like, nobody calls them STG in America. Anyway, so this shoot 'em up or shmup or STG is of the side-scrolling variety, for the most part. It actually will do a thing where it rotates the screen to vertical mode, and you'll have to play the rest of the level as a vertical shooter, which is actually a pretty cool little move that I quite enjoyed. It's for sure a throwback not to the amazing Genesis Super Nintendo era of old school shooters, but further back to like the NES and Master System. Definitely reminded me the most of R-Type on the Master System. It goes full on 8-bit in some ways. It's not like Alua's Awakening or anything. It's not exactly an 8-bit game that could fit on an NES card or anything. Yeah. But they definitely made all the music in either Famitrack or LSDJ or one of those new old like kind of softwares. They definitely made all the graphics out of those nice chunky pixels. But the art style is actually pretty good. The only thing is that it kind of lacks in things like the background department. Like, I'm pretty sure I haven't played through all 15 levels, but at least for 7 of them, the background is the exact same star field that just kind of passes by. which, again, is kind of how they did it in R-Type, so I'm, like, not really complaining there. But really, the game is not about the aesthetics, and thank goodness. It is more about the mechanics. And so the mechanics of this is, like, I like to say that it's kind of trying to do everything all at once and succeeding in some ways. So you have your ship, of course, your little guy, who is it's top down, even though it's scrolling to the side, which is something you're just going to have to get used to. It's an interesting perspective that I don't see often. And indeed, your ship is still top down when it scrolls over into vertical mode. So it's just basically turning the screen on you.
Interesting.
Yeah. So you have your shots are done with the shoulder bumpers. So if you hold down the right shoulder bumper, you do a straightforward shot. So like a double shot or something like that. If you hold down the left bumper, then it does that kind of shooting that I almost never seem to like. And that's where if you pull the ship back, it shoots forward. But if you turn the ship up, it like points down and then shoots down. And then if you point it the other way, it shoots up. You know, that kind of directional shooting. Yeah, it's got that. Yeah. And then if you hold both of them down, then it activates your spread shot, which will take your four bullets and spread them out rather than having the four straightforward. And each, you know, of course, have their own efficaciousness for certain enemies. So, like, if you, you know, have a bunch of enemies straightforward, you want to use a straightforward shot. But if you're starting to get overwhelmed by enemies coming from all sides, you want to switch over to that spread shot. And of course, under no circumstances do you want to use that directional shot. And the game actually never really seems to utilize like a necessity for any of that. Like, I never had to use the directional shot, and you'd think in a game that gave me that as a functionality that they'd throw that in there. I just found myself using the spread shot or straightforward shot exactly the way I wanted to, and the game had no complaints. And I had no complaints about that either. So the interesting thing here, though, and I hardly ever see this in these kind of shooters, is that it has an upgrade system within the stages. So you can, of course, power up a shield. You can power up a missile that shoots out. Another thing that I don't quite know what it is, but I think it's like this laser beam that just sticks out of the ship persistently, and you can like take down enemies at close range with it temporarily. You know, it has bomb attacks. It's very Darius-like in that way, but it only has like three upgrades really for each one. And, you know, that's all you need because the levels are fairly short, really, for, you know, there being 15 of them. They go by pretty quick. So, like, the thing about it is that you can actually permanently upgrade, like, different things about your ship based on credits that you collect in the levels, especially from boss fights, and then you can spend in a shop between stages. You can also replay levels. So this is a shooter in which you can grind.
Nice.
You could just grind the first level over and over again, get, you know, your 100 credits and, you know, upgrade the ship's like shooting speed, the amount of bullets that come out of the spread shot, like all kinds of stuff. And it's also very forgiving in the sense that you have a life bar that is also upgradable. And even things like blowing up your entire ship by running into a wall, like, you know, getting scrolled into the wall, which is a you know, common occurrence in all shooters. It only just takes away a thing of life, and then you just, you know, show up again. So they kind of act like lives, but they, you know, blowing up your whole ship or just getting bumped by a bullet equals the exact same amount of damage. And then, yeah, all this to say, it gets to the end for a boss fight. Each boss fight is kind of, you know, clear cut. There's not a whole lot of, there's no bullet hell to this game. It very much, like I said, acts like an R-type thing where it's more like, just staying on top of the enemy and not getting kind of sneak attacked by like enemy fighters or anything like that, more so than dodging big colorful arrays of bullets. In fact, the bullets aren't very colorful at all. which
they're not,
you know,
pretty enough.
Well, you know, there are prettier. Hey, this is a critique. I'm supposed to critique. But anyways, yeah, like, there were some moves that this game pulls that I really, really enjoyed. One of them is a boss where after it's in the first stage that is actually all vertical scrolling. I think it's stage 4. You do this vertical scrolling stage, and then the boss comes down, and it's like a UFO looking thing, and it starts going from side to side, and then it starts like speeding up, and then like the way it moves, you're like, oh, this is a Space Invaders boss. It's moving like a Space Invader. And so, you know, you use the tricks that you know from Space Invader, you know, shooting not where it is, but where it's going to be. And you know, you take it down. And I just thought that was really clever. And that actually unlocked a game mode, which allows you to now play the entire game in vertical mode with just shooting waves of enemies. So like Galaga or Space Invaders.
That's cool.
And Yeah, there's actually another unlockable after stage 10, and then another unlockable after stage 15. So, you know, the game actually has, like, all these different modes that can be unlocked, most of which, like, I know it has an endless scrolling mode, too, where you just kind of beat your old high score. Yeah, like, you know, like I said, the game is not overall, like, the prettiest. I like the look of the bosses. The common enemies are kind of... They're very much in that 8-bit vein of, like, well, I don't really know what it is, but I recognize it.
Yeah.
Like, this is kind of a cluster of things, and I know when it shows up what it does. The game communicates that very effectively, and the soundtrack is actually... I kind of praise the soundtrack for not being really over the top. It, you know, usually when a modern composer gets a hold of one of these old, like, 8-bit type of programs, they decide they want to be the next Tim Fallon or Vert, and they, like, you know, just throw in, like, all this stuff to varying results. This guy was very content to either make it, like, kind of low-key and in some ways dissonant and, like, kind of creepy. And so, and by the way, I don't think that any of the music is actually tied to any of the levels. Every time I tried stage one again, it seemed to be playing a different song. But... because it's not Vert or Tim Fallon, like, I can't, you know, there weren't really any melodies that I could latch onto and be like, oh, okay, I recognize this song from this. It's just all kind of like, I'm listening to 8-bit shooter music. And, you know, as somebody who pays close attention to video game music, it's very odd that it didn't have that memorable effect to me.
No.
But that's not to its detriment. It's all to establish this 8-bit feel that I think the game does pretty well. I think that, you know, the lack of polish is just all due to it being the kind of game it is. I mean, if you, you know, well, I'll get to that in my final, like, conclusion or whatever. But basically what I really appreciate about this game is the fact that it keeps drawing you in by giving you purchasable upgrades. And I like the variety in the levels, at least in terms of, like, boss patterns and, like, things that happen. Because honestly, the stages are just kind of, you know, there's nothing that really, really stood out in, like, even halfway through the game, apart from when it would move to, you know, vertical mode and things like that. But the boss fights are really entertaining, and like I said, I really like how it keeps you coming back, and I like that it has all these unlockable endless modes, so that if you want to spend more time with this game, you certainly can.
Nice. Well, for $8, what is your verdict?
Okay, so $8 is actually the key here, because for $8, I think this is definitely worth it. If you rolled that price back to, like, $5 and picked up something like Pacific Wings, which I didn't get to review, but I will say very briefly that it is a shooter that makes you feel sorry for it.
Oh, God!
In its actual description, one of the things... I'm going to read the description of that game for you right now. 20 incredible levels. It's the same level. It's 1942, basically. They just remade 1942, literally. And retro-style graphics. 4 different weapon upgrades on your plane. Not anywhere else. Different enemies! Exclamation point. The last line...
Not the same?
The last line of the description for Pacific Wings. And I purchased this game with my money. The last line of it is... If you find bugs or have any suggestions to make Pacific Wings even better, please tell us.
That's so beautiful.
That's what you get for $5 on the Switch. And if you turn it up to, like, the $20 range, you can get frickin' Rolling Gunner, which is one of the best shmups I've ever played. The Switch has so many shoot 'em ups on it, and I think that when you get into, like, that sweet spot of $8 to $10, that you're going to find games like this that are absolutely worth buying. They're just not going to have the same effect as something that's, like, just at the very top of the cream of the crop, you know? Which is Rolling Gunner, by the way.
Dang.
You know, and or Ikaruga, but, you know, Ikaruga, that has the benefit of, you know, already being available elsewhere.
True.
But, yeah, this is not a game that's going to blow you away, but it is definitely going to earn your money.
Sounds good. Next game to talk about is called Zenith, developed by Infinigon, published by Badland Games, released September 20th on the Switch for $14.99. Zenith is an action RPG coded in humor, adventuring, exploring runes, saving the world, you know the drill, a single-player game with an actual story, no on-air do-it-yourself crap you won't need to piece together the story by yourself as if it was a Swedish chair, we promise. Pernell, tell us about Zenith.
Zenith is hilarious. I am just sad that that is where it ends.
Uh-oh.
So, yeah. So, the premise behind Zenith is that basically you are an adventurer who, in the past, managed to acquire some really sweet accolades in the form of a magic discovery for his kingdom, which led to them pretty much saying, hey, you are officially inducted into our society as a high-end scholar. Rags, riches, not rags, rather, but riches and empowerment all wait for you. And then some time goes by, and you are dumped into the future, or rather present, and you learn that things did not quite go the way you wanted them to, and the game's quest, or rather adventure, leads you to eventually learning just what happened to him. Why did he fall out with the kingdom? What became of the kingdom and his friends, which he journeyed with at the beginning of the game? The premise sounds cool, and honestly, I think it is. The writing is cool. There's a lot of really funny scenarios that take place, which honestly is some crude humor. There's a lot of swearing, but I'm a grown man. It doesn't bother me as long as it's actually entertaining. And I think the writing for these jokes was pretty decent. It's pretty good, especially for a typical RPG. The problem is in the technicalities of it all. So as you are playing around, this game is a hack and slash adventure, so to speak. You have an attack button, which allows you to move into a pretty straightforward combo. And the combo varies slightly depending on what weapon you're using, whether it is the sword, a hammer, or a fist. Now, in addition to that, you also get two other buttons. One is for like a projectile magic spell, which can be acquired by equipping different gems. And the other is typically a larger spell, but it's attributed to a scroll. And they all drain a mana bar, where when it regenerates slowly, or if you need it back quicker, you can use a potion to chug and get your magic up. Now, again, that initial description sounds well and good. There's a lot of games that play like that, and they're very fantastic in what they do. The problem in this game, as far as combat goes, is that there's very little to give you an impression of how well you're doing against monsters. So when you're fighting a group of monsters in a melee fashion, you are mashing that attack button to do damage. However, there's no knockback for the monsters. There's no real registry there's registry that you're doing damage because numbers pop up. However, when they're attacking you, it's just kind of there. Like, they are hitting you, but in the thick of it all, you might not even notice they're hitting you. You'll just notice your health going down, which means now you have to chug a potion to get your health back. Yeah, there's a defend button, but when you can't really pick up on too many of the tells to pick up on, if you're getting hit or not, you're not going to really use the defend button. You're just trying to survive. And since it drains your magic very quickly, too, you're like, not worth it, because I can't time it to just block and keep going. And if you hold it, you have no magic, so you're just basically having battles of attrition where I'm wailing on them. I'm wailing, they're wailing back, I'm wailing on them. Now, there is a dodge button where you can push to roll out of the way, but that becomes a problem when you're fighting larger mobs of enemies. They're pretty much just kind of swarming, and you're just running from them, rolling and rolling and rolling, hoping to stop and throw a swing back. And up, start rolling again. It's problematic. It becomes rather annoying. And yeah, you can do fireball, roll away, fireball, roll away. But that gets old pretty fast, too. Honestly, I want more out of my combat, and this didn't provide it in that regard. The next thing. Technical flaws. There are some technical issues in this game, some of which don't inhibit the gameplay. They're just kind of stupid. For example, you'll be in a story sequence where the characters are all talking or whatnot, and you'll just notice that the emperor, who is supposed to be regal and all of his right, is just walking into the wall constantly because for some reason the character model is just walking over there for no reason. Or maybe he's just sunken into the floor because for some reason the floor is now made of jello and he wanted to go for a swim? I don't know. But that has happened. My main character has fallen into the floor. NPCs have fallen into the floor. NPCs have just walked ridiculously for no apparent reason before. Sometimes, in addition, the game has a way of saying, hey, here and there we're going to have like a typical window where text will show up. But there might be, say, a humorous scenario where there's like multiple conversations happening on the screen, so they'll use like untext boxed letters over the graphics. But depending on the color of the font they use or how widely panned out the image is, it's hard to read what the actual text is saying. So there's a cool conversation happening that you can't read. So it's like, That's freaking annoying. And then the worst offender for me, believe it or not, I haven't even gotten to that yet, is sometimes the enemies don't exist, but they do exist. It's like Schrodinger's enemy. So you'll be, for example, I'll tell you two scenarios. One time I was playing it, I was in a scenario where I was trying to like just walk through an area. And as I was about to flip a switch, a light appeared behind my character and an enemy was there. Oh shit, I said. And I hurriedly turned around with my sword and I thrust it into the enemy and nothing happened. It was just a guy, a monster model who was sitting there being a dick. He couldn't hurt me and I couldn't hurt him. Huh. So I flipped the switch and walked away and he followed me. He just kept coming. I turned back to attack him. Nothing. Kept progressing. He was still there and eventually he disappeared. But when I walked over to that area again, he showed up on one part of the screen and his health bar showed up on another part of the screen.
Weird.
Still could not do damage to him or his ghost life bar. But thankfully at that time, he was mostly an annoyance. However, later on in the game, there was a scenario where I had to open a door. The door required me to kill all the enemies in the room before I could actually interact with the door to open it. I killed two guys, saw one guy left and figured, guess I better go kill him. And he's doing his attack animation. He's coming at me and I run up to fight and I thrust my sword into him and nothing happened. Oh, it was God. Just a character model who was just hanging out there. His life bar was across the room. I couldn't interact with the door until all the monsters were dead. So I had to reset the game, go to my last save point and try it again.
I'm sensing a theme with this.
It's glitchy as shit. That's the thing you're sensing. And it's rough, that's too, right. Because it's like, as you know, I love games that have humor in them. I like games that take tropes and throw them on their head. And this game does a great job of it. There's like Final Fantasy character parries that made me laugh, especially in light of the recent Final Fantasy VII announcements. I wanted to like it. I like humorous games. But it's just... I was really frustrated. Even things like the music gets weird in that the music is really good, but it's just kind of there. Like, it almost feels like it's just kind of like the best way to put it is almost like saying someone took a jukebox and said battle music here and town music here, and you put a quarter in and it just kind of plays, but it doesn't feel like it truly belongs there. It's a weird way to describe it, but maybe Chris, Mike, he was talking about music earlier. Maybe you got to understand what I mean when I say that. It's just like this sense of like music that feels like it just got slapped in. It wasn't like created for it. It was just kind of thrown in there.
Yeah. It feels like incongruous, I think is maybe the word.
Yeah. And it was a frustrating thing. So it was like, as I'm sitting there playing this game, I'm like, am I enjoying this? Is this something I'd want to cough up cash for? And my takeaway was the humor would be good, but the gameplay has to be conducive to the humor. I have to want to keep progressing to hear more jokes and more quips. But my takeaway was I'd rather get them from somewhere else because I'd rather play a fun game.
That's a bummer. I enjoyed it when it was on Xbox, but I don't remember nearly anywhere near that amount of technical issues.
Honestly, that actually almost worries me because it makes me wonder if they became a thing with the Switch.
It's possible. Yeah, I don't remember it being that glitchy at all. The action itself I could see is either hit or miss depending on if the gameplay clicks with you, but the glitchiness, you know, there's no excuse for glitchiness.
And I agree with you there because, like, and let's be honest here, if the glitchiness wasn't there and that combat was kind of like rough and tumble, I could have probably barrel rolled through it for the humor. It would have been like, hey, this is fun. You know, I want to hear some more quips. Is the combat stellar? Well, it's, you know, it's no ease eight or anything, but I'm getting through it. I'm getting by. It's facilitating the game that gets me to the ledge, whatever, you know, but in this particular case, it was just more burden than I wanted.
Yeah. Well, $15 on Zenith. What do you say?
I would have to say deny it. But if you are really into humorous games and you're willing to overlook a number of slights, then a try it is in order. But otherwise, I'd have to go deny.
That's a bummer.
Trust me, I agree. Like I said, the is a hilarious freaking game. It's just
just glitchiness. But one final game to talk about tonight, that is called Scheming Through the Zombie Apocalypse, The Beginning, developed by Entertainment Forge, published by Radleika Games, released September 17th on 17th on PS4, 18th on Xbox One, 20th on the Switch for $4.99. Scheming Through the Zombie Apocalypse, The Beginning is the first episode of an episodic adventure game set in an anthropomorphic animal society. Help Hank and Larry find food and loot to survive through the harsh zombie-infested streets by convincing other animals to do the work for you. Chris, tell us about Scheming Through the Zombie Apocalypse.
All right, Scheming Through the Zombie Apocalypse. I was actually just Googling the characters' names because I couldn't remember, and then you said them, and I was like, oh yeah, yeah, Hank and Larry. It's tough for me to remember names. Okay, so Scheming Through the Zombie Apocalypse. Well, this is a this is an interesting take on, I suppose, what you would kind of call the adventure game genre. I maybe actually call it more of like a, it feels more like visual novel-esque to me, because it's got some like interesting things to it. By the way, my cat's here, so if you start hearing him, that's the reason there.
That was weird.
Honk, honk. Oh, and my pet goose. His name is Hank Larry.
He's untitled.
Yes. Oh yeah, he's untitled. Anyways, so yeah, this game is a it's basically it starts off with, you know, two characters that get together in, Larry comes over to Hank's apartment. Hank is an older ex-salesman who is also a bunny. And Larry is a little, like, kind of a Yorkie, I think, just a small dog. And he comes over to warn Hank about the zombie apocalypse. And they're both like, oh no, well, that's okay, because I have a year's supply of food and drink in here. Let's do some cocaine.
That seems like a logical progression.
Yeah, pretty much. And then 4 months later, they run out of cocaine, and so they decide they want to go out and brave the zombie apocalypse in order to gain money, either for drugs or for food, your choice, as the player, of course. So obviously this is not a game for kids. This is not even a game you want to play even close to your parents or the clergy, because it is fuckword after fuckword in this game. It's nice. Like every other line, and they talk about, like, you know, illicit stuff like that. You know, mostly just like about drugs and stuff. And yeah, these are two like ne'er-do-wells for sure. And they eventually, like, you know, you kind of do the tutorial stage or so, like it's hard to call any of them a stage, but I'll get to that, where Hank, you know, spots Larry while he goes and tries to scavenge some stuff from a local I don't even remember, some kind of place, just a empty building kind of thing. And that's where the actual gameplay, quote unquote, kind of happens. What it is that you are looking through a pair of binoculars. And so you can, like, look around, like, this flat stage. It's, you know, very much like just a page out of a book, like, flat. And while the character is walking through it and talking to you, occasionally there will be dialogue options that you can then pick. Most of them have to do with some form of trying to coerce or convince somebody to do something that they don't want to do, because they don't want to get attacked by zombies and killed. Because the zombies, who are, of course, other animals, can, of course, infect you with one bite, and, you know, then you become one of them, and or get outright killed. It's classic zombie-ness. And so, you know, of course, the thing to do is to either fight or, you know, completely avoid them. And, you know, in this stage, then they run into a zombie, quote unquote, but it actually just turns out to be a drunk pigeon, a drunk homeless pigeon, who is friends
better and better.
I know, who is friends to these two giant bulls, who then beat up the Yorkie, but only because Hank from the van, you know, shouting into a walkie-talkie, because that's the way that they talk in this actual stage. Accidentally says something that's racist against cows, and that becomes a running theme it becomes a running theme with this guy that he's just like super racist, but all of his racist things that he says are like just animal things. So he'll be like, the thing that he says to the cows is, "Hey, we don't have any beef with you." And they're like, "Beef?"
Oh, wow.
Yeah, exactly. And, so, and they actually, you know, crash into the apartment and like, you know, they're like, "We're going to make you pay for using hate speech and things like that." And, you know, they then you end up getting like this map that they leave behind that shows all of their favorite scavenging points. And then you find out that there's actually like this scavenging community that you want to join. So then it becomes this wider scheme of trying to collect enough good stuff to get into this community, which presumably is all populated by bulls. And then they figure out while driving in his in Hank's shitty van that's like literally you could see like where it's held together with scotch tape and things like that. They eventually get into like just different places, like different meeting grounds for survivors of the apocalypse, and they try to convince different animals to go in and scavenge for them in order to get all these supplies that they then trade for better supplies or for just straight up money. And you know, you just keep going through that in the game until, well, I didn't get to the end, so I presume that something happens because there's a chapter two. So, but anyways, it kind of just repeats like that. And really what it is that you're never actually doing anything in the game. You're listening to lots of like, pretty funny if, again, your thing is fuckwords and, like, you know, references to, like, drinking and cocaine and all this other stuff. It, to me, the dialogue is somewhere between Family Guy and Rick and Morty, because it's definitely them convincing people to get into really uncomfortable situations. That really reminded me of Rick and Morty.
Oh, God.
You know, just Morty. Being like, yeah, exactly. And yeah, parts of it were like really funny, and it's definitely entertaining. Like, it keeps you drawn in. Just the quality of the dialogue and the quality of the voice acting, really good voice acting, and the animation looks really good too. The thing is that really the gameplay is just making choices, and there's no real consequence to it. You know, these items that you get in your inventory, the goal is, of course, to get as many items as you can without getting the person that you sent into the place killed. Like, they'll be like, "Oh, here's a basement." And then, "I don't want to explore this basement. There might be zombies in it." And then you gotta, like, actually convince them to go in and do it. Oh, and, man. You know, they might end up getting killed, but it's of no consequence because they're not in the next area anyway. Like, as soon as they do the job, if they do it successfully and live, they just go. They go away. So it's kind of like, You kind of almost want to set your inner, you know, like Untitled Goose Game, you kind of want to set your inner monster free and, you know, send these poor folks to their death, because even collecting all the stuff, there doesn't seem to be much of a point to it. Because even if they collect all the best stuff, you only have a certain amount of slots in your inventory that you can put stuff in that you then, you know, trade off at the end of that part of the stage. So in that sense, even if, you know, I did this one run like almost perfectly and I got so much loot and I couldn't carry it, I had to leave it behind. So I was like, well, I was like, I could have had more fun with this. And so, you know, the next one, I had more fun with it. And certainly it was not to my detriment.
Dark Lucas, yeah, says, this sounds like a good game for a sadist like me.
It really is. A sadist or somebody specifically like me, somebody who had to go through a week of high pressure sales training, because that was a part of my life at one point in my 20s, is that I actually had to learn how to like do this weird mind control stuff that like the top commission salespeople do. And, you know, this guy actually like does go into like these kind of Dale Carnegie style, like, you know, talking about, you know, because there's a lot of scenes of him and of Hank and Larry just in the car bullshitting about, yeah, like sales stuff. And yeah, like the only way that really kind of comes into play is that you can negotiate the cut for the actual animal who's going to go in there and get the stuff, and the people who are just out in the van screaming into a walkie-talkie at them. And yeah, like no matter what happens, it's really, really well done how the game weaves in all of your choices into the rest of the dialogue for that part of the game and even into the next. So, like, if you tell an elaborate lie about, like, being from the military or something back before the apocalypse to convince somebody that you're safe, that will keep coming back in references, and you can choose not to say it. You can choose to tell the truth, but if you tell a lie, they stick with the lie. And you can even choose to abandon the lie at certain points. And it's just like, it's really well written. And they say that they've written over like 50,000 words in this game.
Damn.
Based on all the on all the available choices. And every single one of them is voice acted. So whoa. For that alone, I'm like, this is a really well-made game for the price. It's just the caveat is that you're never going to like really walk around and like talk. There's only when you walk around to talk to your potential scavengers that you get to walk around and like point with the mouse. I actually didn't realize until very late in my playthrough that there is actually a mouse cursor that you use with the touchpad. Because I never needed it.
On the PS4.
On the PS4, yeah. So I was like, what is this thing? Like, why is there a cursor in my way? And then I like touched the touchpad and it went away. I was like, oh, okay. So that's all I did with the mouse.
That works. So, well, overall, yeah. $5 on Scheming Through the Zombie Apocalypse. What do you say?
I say that this definitely appeals to a specific game like fan and a like somebody who really likes point and clicks but don't actually like to solve puzzles. Like is kind of where I'm at on that, which actually is kind of me. So and then it also has to be somebody who is just fine with the most lowbrow and sadistic style of humor imaginable, done by what at some point were probably cute animals. Like everybody looks very ravaged by like the apocalypse. So everybody's got this dirty, unkempt look to them. And of course, many of them are drugged out or something else. But if those things appeal to you, like I'd recommend watching maybe like a bit of a gameplay video and then go ahead and get it because it's entertaining and you'll want to play through this multiple times and choose different things. Or the game always autosaves at the beginning of a dialogue scene. And so if you make a whole bunch of choices and you decide you don't like where it's going or you didn't get a good enough cut of the treasure, you can just reload it and do the whole thing differently and end up with this whole different chain of like dialogue that's happening. Nice. So
I want to ask one thing though, related to what you were just describing. So you mentioned that it's funny. Well, everything's voiced over. How do you feel about the voice delivery? Like, do you feel as though the lines are delivered well? Like, they hit punchlines very well? Is it just kind of, or do you feel like the lines are phoned in at all?
No, I think that they're good. Here's the thing. Like, it seems that they had no budget going into this, so it's kind of a miracle that this happened this way. Because I looked at their Twitter, and it hasn't been updated since last August, like of 2018. Boy. Oof. And many of their tweets were like, we're still looking for voice actors. Please send us, you know, blah, blah, blah. And like, but by the time I got into it, I was like, yeah, this is about as good as any of those like cartoons made for adults that you see on like Netflix or whatever. Nothing in it like seemed amateurish to me, you know? Mm-hmm. Yeah. In fact, I was kind of surprised by how cheap the game was until I realized, well, there's barely any gameplay here, so that's probably the reason.
And it's the first episode.
The first episode, yeah. I think they're on episode 2 now. I'm not sure if it's come out on everything, but I'm intrigued by this. It's not something I would have picked out for myself, but I think if this is your type of thing, then certainly give it a shot. And at least it's a funny way to kill some time, so...
Yeah, Dark Nika wants to know if you ever find more cocaine.
I haven't. It's not really
bad face.
I know.
Not worth it. 0 out of 10.
But yeah.
Go ahead. No, you go.
I was just gonna say I convinced a girl goat, I wanna say, to go into the darkened back end corner of a toilet shop to get the 2-ply toilet paper because it was much better than the 1-ply, and she almost got eaten by a zebra that had no legs.
Worth
damn.
It.
Yeah. Seriously, so fuck 1-ply.
Exactly. It's really funny how bothered the characters are by the fact that she could only find 1-ply initially.
You know how much more danger it would be to find a decent wash station that's unencumbered if that 1-ply fails you? 2-ply is needed.
Yeah. No, agreed.
Oh, man. Well, that is it for this episode. Thanks, everyone, for being here. It was fun. I like doing this.
It was hilarious.
I concur. This has been a grand time for me.
Yeah, thanks.
I can't wait to go see that my laundry was done while we were recording this.
we might have to go back into that well and find the laundry fairy then, because that Joker's elusive.
Oh, geez. So laundry aside, that is it for this episode. Thanks again to all of you for being here and hanging out. Thanks again to Dark Mika for coming on, doing her thing. Thanks again to Tim for coming on, doing his thing. Music, our good friend Tom Miller had a request, the song Video Games by someone named Lennon Beasley, and he requested that we play it on the show, so we're going to check that out.
Tom Miller's got good taste, so I'm endorsing this too.
Yeah, so it's a very interesting song, I'll put it that way. So it might not be for everyone, but it's interesting. I enjoyed it. But who has final words to end the show? Anybody? Cole, you didn't get to talk much. How about you?
I don't want to fucking talk. What do you think? I come on the podcast to communicate with people? What is this shit?
Communication. Watch your shit on the internet, because it only takes 45 minutes.
Scott Smith, we're coming after you.